brought to you by Penguin.
Casino 44 by James Holland, read by Al Murray. A world of shadows, of primordial gloom, of inchoate violence steeped in menace lay all around me. I was staring down a vertiginous tunnel where all was dark and bloody, and the great wind of ultimate desolation howled and hungered. I was alone, relentlessly alone in a world I never knew. Lieutenant Farley Mowat. Prologue. The headquarters of the U.S. Fifth Army had one of the very best addresses in all of southern Italy, the largest palace ever constructed, and one that utterly dominated the otherwise rather small town of Caserta. It stood on a flat coastal plain, one of the few such areas in Italy, some 20 miles or so north of Naples, with the backdrop of the jagged ridge of the 1,800-foot-high Monte Tifata and Monte Lognano rising steeply behind it, a barrier in many ways that hid the Bourbon royal palace from the current battle, raging 30 miles to the north. Vast it may have been, with an astonishing 1,200 rooms, more than enough to house the headquarters of several armies rather than just one, but it was not the way of Allied generals in this current war to live in luxury when the men they commanded were suffering so many privations up the line at the front. And so General Mark Clark, the Fifth Army commander, had instead made use of the nearly 300 hectares of its magnificent grounds. Here, near the mighty palace, but most definitely not within it, were a collection of tents, specially adapted trucks and vehicles, sheltered by umbrella pines and camouflage nets. "Have my camp in a new grove of trees," he wrote to his wife, Rini, on the 23rd of October 1943, just a week or so after moving his headquarters there. "It's quite nice." Sergeant William C. Cheney was running the general's mess. A black technical sergeant, he had joined Clark's staff when the Fifth Army commander had been a lowly lieutenant colonel and newly arrived in Washington, D.C. to take up an instructing post at the U.S. Army War College. When Clark had been posted to Britain as the youngest major general in the U.S. Army, Cheney had asked if he could go too. The pair had not been separated since. And it was Cheney who not only ran the mess, but oversaw the construction of Clark's immediate encampment. "I'm having a portable hut put up about 50 yards away," Clark wrote in the same letter to Rini, "under a tree where I can hold conferences when it gets cold and where we can sit in the evening and have a fire." The idea was for it to be flat-packed into a truck if and when they moved their headquarters. By the beginning of December, he was also using this hut as a makeshift cinema. Since every day was a working day in Italy, Clark was keen to make Sundays a little different whenever possible, and so had begun showing films in the hut on Sunday evenings. Just for his immediate staff officers, the army commander understood as well as anyone the importance of morale. Of course, his staff were not in quite the same physical danger as frontline infantrymen, but they were not immune in a war zone, were expected to, and did, work incredibly long hours, and the pressure on all of them was considerable. The lives of many young men and civilians of all ages, both men and women, depended on their decisions, attention to detail, and assiduousness. Furthermore, most were living out of tents in one of the worst winters ever experienced in Italy. It was impossible not to be awed by the extraordinary landscape in which they were now living and fighting. There was no view anywhere in this long, narrow peninsula that did not include mountains. Even from the few flat plains, distant peaks loomed magnificently and with an immutable sense of menace. And while these immense heights were home to innumerable villages, hamlets and farming communities on their lower slopes, it was in the valleys below that most of the 40 million Italians lived, crammed into towns and cities of impossibly narrow streets and through which the few main roads, originally built in the time of the Romans, snaked their way north and south. The Via Emilia along the Adriatic coast, the Via Appia, which ran from Rome to Brindisi on the southeast heel of Italy, the Via Aurelia running down the western Tyrrhenian coast, and the Via Casilina, which linked the cities of Naples and Rome. Ancient routes trod foot swift, foot sore for millennia. This latter road passed through Caserta and on, north through a narrow valley overlooked by mighty 3,000-foot peaks. It then hugged the next massif of Monte Cassino, with its 6th-century Benedictine abbey perched atop, before emerging into the wider Liri Valley that led onwards towards the capital.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?